What is it?
Well, there's a girl at school.
She hot?
And she's super smart.
Hot?
Funny and cool.
Hot?
Yes, she's hot, super hot.
Nice.
I'm basically a wrecking ball for the youth of America. All I want is to brainwash them all with my massive nipples under my knee. We must be like-mindly.
Don't give me the sexist bullshit, right? I'm just saying women aren't meant to fight. They have tiny, hollow bones.
Listening to the Cobras and Fire podcast with your hosts, LC and Baco, coming out of Denver, Colorado, St. Paul, Minnesota, and spreading the message around the world.
Cobras and Fire. I'm your host, LC, and I am joined, as always, with the blossoming Baco. How are you, sir?
I am well, man. Good morning, LC. How are things there in Denver?
Excellent. Thank you for asking. I am in my Tin Can 2.0 studio.
Nice.
Hopefully it sounds great for the listener.
Always does, baby.
Oh, yes. I'm dialing it in. It's only taken me 5.5 years, but today might be the episode that I finally bring it home.
Yeah, you know, give some people some of the making the sausage or the background stuff. You called me yesterday to tell me you had kind of a new setup and wanted me to hear it. And he's like, you always make fun of me. And I just kind of, I do make fun of you because, like, you probably will get it dialed in and it'll sound a little better. The problem is that, like, tomorrow morning you're going to wake up and move the whole thing and put it somewhere else.
It'll be over. I'm going to take pictures of every single thing here so I can set it up exactly like a grid. We'll see.
I'm sure it sounds velvety.
Yes, yes. The tones, sweet tones, man. But anyway, so, well, how are you on your end, sir?
I'm well, man. I got up early this morning, like I said. I think this is the first time I've showered before one of our Sunday morning recordings. So, yeah, I slept fucking like a rock. Although, I don't know if we want to share this with the public or not. I woke up in a panic at 4:30 briefly because I realized that I posted the episode for Tuesday and forgot to set it private. So there is a little treat for some people this morning. I ran downstairs, quickly took care of that, and then passed out again. So slept for a couple more hours.
You yanked it down. So you think somebody out there was like,
I know Bill Elam already saw it.
Okay, well, that guy has some kind of sense. Yeah, it's amazing how quick. I think he hears the episodes before I do.
Yeah, sometimes. But I think he hears it before I finish editing it.
Yeah, yeah. Mm. Again, but can we touch on our listenership as of late?
We've had some fun interactions lately. Let's get into it.
Okay, well, you know, I was just going to mention that...
We don't talk about the audience enough, frankly.
We really don't, and we appreciate everybody that's been sharing the episodes and everything like that. Like we say, that we think our entire audience, for the most part, is just other podcasters that listen to our show.
Which,
by the way, when we get feedback from other podcasters actually appreciating certain moments of the show, it is very we like it very much because those are the most harsh critics, I would think.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Well, I listen to other podcasts, and I'm a podcaster. You know
what I mean? Yeah. I listen to other podcasters, too. I'm like, damn. This terrible.
I stopped listening to Podcast Rock City.
Yeah, and then I listen to jokes. And a lot of times I have the, where have I heard? Stop me if you've heard this before. Somehow I sense I've heard that before on my own show. But anyway, going back to this, is that
slower version of what I do. The speed limit's a little slower, and I'm not going to go there.
Yeah, but anyway.
Apparently we're mean today. Let's get into it, man. What do we got?
Yeah, I thought we're nice spirited. But anyway, but in all seriousness, thanks for everybody that does share our show. And I wanted to give you a compliment real quick and then segue into this, is that whatever, never mind. You know, it's now, has it been officially a year? Did you start it in January or February last year?
Oh, it was later, Dad. I want to say it started around April. Okay. Maybe March, but I don't know. I know some of my early episodes were recorded during the initial shutdown.
Okay. But we're coming up, we'll just say that we're coming up on almost a full year of whatever, never mind, your spectacular grunge sidecast created because of my scheduling conflict to fill in, kind of as a fill-in every 2 weeks. But this thing, I just got to tell you, if you're newer to the show or you simply haven't checked out this part of it, you talk about a wealth of material. You do not go in half ass on anything. You go in full ass. You are full ass, Baco. Okay,
I've always been full ass my whole life.
You have. I mean, the whole countdown per Rolling Stone, the top 25 grunge albums, but the additional content. I always enjoy the album breakdown, but the fact that you've lined up all these interviews with the creators of the albums, from producers to those involved, band members, things like that. I mean, that has been a wealth. There's so much material now in that section just on our website in the last year. But my point of talking about this right now is not to blow you specifically, but to go into the fact that last week a prophecy came true. Who is one of the mascots of our show?
We have so many, but I think you're talking about Steve.
Yes, Steve. And the man himself, Steve, I think you say his name, Steve Albini.
Albini.
Steve Albini. You interviewed him and is officially, because of one a couple articles out there. I think it's like six or seven now, like morphed versions.
Yeah. I mean, we got Alt Press. That's the first time we've ever had the Alternative Press pick us up.
Yeah, Alt Press, but there is a couple quotes that were out there from Gene Simmons being prank called by Nirvana. That's a great clickable headline. Yeah. But I mean, for more in-depth breakdowns of the show, that show within a week, just to let you know, not throw out specific numbers, is our second highest downloaded episode of all time over the last 5.5 years. Exploded out there. So what were your thoughts on that? Steve brought it.
Yeah, man. I honestly was a little surprised that it I had a feeling that Gene Simmons thing might get picked up, but just because that's a headline, you know what I mean?
Sure.
But I was surprised that we've had headlines before with people bigger names than Steve Albini. The fact that had the effect, because it also had a trickle-down effect, for that week. The numbers for that week saw a spike in back episodes of other whatever in mind.
Michael
whatever.
Beinhorn.
Yeah, exactly. Beinhorn, a couple of the album episodes, like a facelift episode popped into the top 10 for the week. Obviously, the Nirvana Bleach one came up. So, it was the gift that, like you said, the prophecy, Steve saved the show. We were struggling there, and then Steve...
Steve saved it, as always. He's both our nemesis and our advocate. He's everything, Steve. But no, it's interesting because a lot of times people will go to the actual article but not listen to the actual episode. You know what I mean?
Like, yeah, we've seen that a lot. Coverage, with certain
people dive in. So Nirvana, big thing like that. Point is, besides that, in the show notes, will always be going forward the link that has the entire archive that separates. Or whatever, never mind, sidecast from Cobras and Fire. So if you want to share that with friends that are into grunge and everything like that, just it's right there for your easy sharing ability. That's my point of talking about this. So awesome.
Yeah, well, and thank you for that. But I also really want to – there's a lot of people that along the way that have hung in with every episode and almost always give me something, some kudos or something very nice to say about how much they're enjoying it. So thank you for everybody with that. I'm glad it seems to be, striking a nerve with at least a certain crowd. So that was my goal, and it's really helped make it fun for myself, too. And all the guests I've had on, by the way. And more to come.
Yeah, what's coming up next?
Temple of the Dog with Dave Brewington from Blame Your Brother will have been out there. So, as well as my interview with Corbin Reef, author of the Chris Cornell book, Total Fucking Godhead. You know, the list is out there. If you want to ruin it, the surprise for you, that's okay. Everybody's free to do what they want. But I like to leave a little mystery out there.
Sure.
At the end of the year, I think in the last episode you and I did officially for 2020, we talked about, you actually brought it up, a brilliant point that we do not have a proper succession plan in place. And frankly, we would be negligent to not address this thing because we are living in a pandemic right now. We don't know what the future holds for us. And with the importance of our show, it just seems that that is a glaring hole in our basically our power structure, you know what I mean? Who would fill in and be the showrunner and the producer? Two things I just found out that about 2 weeks ago that I was.
Okay. Where'd you hear that from?
We had a meeting. You were there.
I know. It was not.
It was irreverent.
Right. It was irreverent. Yes. Okay. What about
I didn't know we had job titles. That's the other thing, too, is that when we're done with this, we do need to give ourselves official job titles for the show, even though we both kind of wear all the hats. But let's just make it a, you know.
So. I think you're right. I mean, think about it. I just say right now, just fuck it. Go with Steve Albini. Give him a call.
Steve!
Just interview him every week. I think that's the good plan.
Oh, is content?
I don't know. No, you're co-host. By the way, that's what I was going to say, too, is also, well
he'd
done.
He'd be fun to have as a co-host. Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
That guy would shut me down on nonstop. Yeah, you know what? That guy is all business, man. No BS. There ain't no goofing around on his dime.
I didn't know that. I think the phrase is he does not suffer fools.
So yes, exactly.
I don't know how he stayed in the line for you with you for an hour, but he did.
I'm a likable guy, Luce.
Despite
what I'm about to say is my succession plan.
Yeah, maybe that was why that was so popular. Just seeing the fact that you hung in the whole time before it was like an episode of Survivor interview.
I think people who have worked in bands and musicians might view that a little differently because. You know, I was talking to Toomey, and he brought up, like, we've both dealt with guys like that.
Sure.
Just, so, it's really just his personality, you know, because a couple, yourself and a couple of listeners pointed out, man, that seemed like a rough one. It really didn't feel that way. There was times that he, you know, was clearly not gonna, you know, he didn't want to make any titty bar jokes.
You know, no, that was
but my joke was more about like I've been to this one horse town, and that literally the only I can even remember off the top of my head is the Perkins across the street from the strip club on the highway that splits down the on the. It's basically from you drive through on the way from the Twin Cities to Rochester, which is where the Mayo Clinic is. You know what I mean? So yeah. There isn't shit to fucking do. And the idea that you got a band as big as Nirvana, because this was not like in the early days of Nirvana.
No, this is at their fucking peak.
And they're in goddamn Cannon Falls, Minnesota. So I'm trying to wrap my head around that paradox. I was like, so it wasn't about them hanging out at tip bars. I'm like, there literally is nothing to do. But he was, you know, he had no time for that conversation.
Steve.
No, not at all. But again, he is at the last 30 years, he has had a billion interviews, never been asked about if he went to Peeler's or not.
Exactly.
So good job.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I bring to the table.
Fuck you, Batman.
That's right. But yeah, man. So what did you want? Did you want to bring up something on the secession plan first?
Yeah, I have a proposal, if it's all right.
Please. All right. Yes.
So when I thought about this, I kind of put together a list of the qualities of LC and the qualities of Baco. I tried to remove myself from the equation. So I will be speaking about myself in the third person here in a sense.
Good.
But I'm only for this. I'm not trying to be arrogant. I'm just trying to look at this as business-like as possible. You know, because it's the podcast business, loose.
I know.
Business.
Understood.
Okay.
Thank you.
All right. That's for you, Mankini.
My erasure's well.
All right. So for LC, what are the things that we gotta have if we're going to replace you, right? So if for something happens to you and for some reason you're no longer able to carry on with your duty as co-host of Cobras and Fire, you need somebody who has a face you want to punch, puts in, I don't know, roughly half the work, and takes credit for other people's ideas. So tell me, that's fucking Ben Affleck.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm.
I don't get that completely.
Act as if. Do you understand what that means? Act as if you are the fucking president of this firm. Act as if you got a 9-inch cock, okay? Act as if.
Well, you know, I mean, he basically spent his whole career riding other people's coattails. Don't you want to fucking punch that guy when you look at him? You see that chin of his?
I guess so.
Maybe for you, it's like looking in a mirror.
The main version of Ben Affleck that I want to punch is the guy that was in Mallrats. Everything else past
that's bad. Okay, fair enough. His character in Mallrats in.
Yeah, okay, the fashionable male version of Ben Affleck.
Yeah, there we go.
So definitely punch that guy.
So now for Baco.
Okay.
Again, you got to have somebody who's smug. Somebody who really wants everybody to stop and applaud every time he manages to accomplish a very simple task. And someone who loves the sound of his own voice. Those are basically the three criteria I thought were the most important. Tell me that's not Eddie Trunk.
The number one thing that I see happening as a byproduct of the internet.
Okay.
So Eddie Trunk and Ben Affleck to me are replacements. So maybe it's me, man. Maybe I'm the one who has to step away, you know, for whatever reasons, health, personal, and it's LC and Trunk. Although he's going to probably insist on taking top billing.
No, I could see the whole Eddie Trunk and Ben Affleck combo working, except the fact that Ben Affleck just never shows up for the show. It's just Eddie Trunk.
Yeah, and then Eddie just complains.
Yeah. Ben just shows up once a year.
Ben's supposed to be here, but you know he's not. I got a big interview with Perry Richardson from Striper lined up, and where's Ben? He's nowhere to be found. I guess I'll just do it all myself, Ben. Maybe you could bang your nanny after the show, huh?
Started when you laid your hand.
So the music you're hearing today is picked by yours truly, and that is bands and songs that I discovered from listening to other podcasts' top albums of 2020 lists. So whoever I got the inspiration for featuring these songs from, it'll be in the show notes, so, and the link to those shows as well. So
very
thank
cool.
you to all music podcasts.
Right.
But
on,
what you
man.
Got, Bucko?
Big news from Motley Crue, man. At least I found it kind of odd.
Okay.
And we're not talking about the whatever the whole what did they call that tour? The stadium tour with Def Leppard?
Yes. The reason that COVID existed.
Yes,
to cancel a tour.
Exactly. The China's like, fuck that. Let's
yes.
drop this shit out. We're not that is not happening.
This is unacceptable.
China. Motley Crue on January 17th.
Okay.
1981 was formed.
Running free, little bit better than
it
used to be.
Oh, really?
So their 40th anniversary was just this last January 17th. And the first thing I thought of was, like, if they know their exact start date, like, this is the day Motley Crue was formed, that destroys their entire narrative of just the destructive, partying, nonstop, just chaotic rock band. I would think it would be difficult for a band with their background to be like, I don't know, somewhere between December and March. You know what I mean? But no, January 17th, it was 1:14 in the afternoon. Mick Mars said, yes, Vince Neil was in the band. It's like, what? Come on. They can't honestly know. Like, oh, it was this day.
Well, I can see that, but maybe they're saying maybe that's when they actually signed with a manager. Maybe they have some documentation. Is
Man,
that the day that
I read about it, and it didn't mention anything like that, and they just
maybe it's the day that yeah, you're right, because if it's based on the origin story of like looking at whatever the umlauts on top of a Löwenbräu.
Yeah.
Or whatever bullshit narrative that was. I don't think they're going to remember that night.
Exactly. Like that. They might remember what happened, but they don't remember the fucking day.
No, absolutely not.
I remember one day, I'll tell you this right now, Loose Cannon. I had a night that I woke up and I found a Schmidt Big Mouth bottle on the floor of my front seat of my car, and I have no idea where it came from. And that seems like how Motley Crue was formed. You know
yeah,
what I mean?
Pretty much, yeah.
It's just like, I know I was 2021 and in college. I don't remember what day that was even. I probably should have marked it on the calendar. It's like, this is the sign that you have a problem, Baco.
Right. I mean, most of their, if you think about it, the, how they can like section off timelines for them is basically looking at times that lawsuits were filed or people died.
Right. And that was all years down the road.
Yeah, those are markers that they can reference, but that beginning part, there's no way that they know that the exact date.
Yeah,
I agree.
I call total bullshit on that.
It's complete bullshit. It's called we have to have something to talk about because our stadium tour got canceled last year because of Kung flu.
Yeah, exactly. Now if they would have said like, hey, January represents our 40th anniversary, I probably won't even be talking about this. The fact that they literally picked a day, it's like, yep, that was the day.
What do you think? I think Tommy's going to rename the tour Fuck Kung Flu Bananas Tour.
Well, Tommy's not a scandemic guy. So
it doesn't matter. I don't think he thinks he's a scandemic. I'm just saying, I'm trying to think of what he would be yelling about. Like a yeah, dude, Kung Flu, it's a...
Oh, I guarantee, like, during his drum solo at every stop, if it happens this summer, you're going to hear him at least one point say, fuck COVID!
Oh, that's what I did.
Yeah.
I know what it is now. The tour for this year is going to be called Fuck COVID, Now Let's See Them Titties Tour.
Fuck COVID, Tom Now Show Me Them Titties!
Put them on the glass! Put them on the glass, 2021, Motley
Crue. Chicks equal trouble. That's new math, bitch. Oh, man. I'm looking now. See, now you're starting to make this thing sound like a worthwhile investment. They do have a rescheduled date here. I think it's in July.
I would go if Tommy signed some kind of agreement that Vince can only do his awful singing, but all stage raps are by Tommy Lee in between songs.
Oh, man. Are you kidding? I guarantee. Look, who would you rather see talk between songs, Tommy or Vince? Come on.
Tommy.
Fuck because, yeah, oh, man. That I mean, fucking brain dead dipshit is just lovable when it comes to that kind of garbage.
It doesn't suck.
Yeah. I still remember when they were doing their reunion coming back from the Generation Swine tour, and they started doing like the greatest. I don't know if you went to these shows, but it was like a greatest hits tour in like 1998, okay, where they started doing like clubs, like 3,000 seaters.
Yeah,
again.
I remember the timeline, but
okay, and it was right after Tommy got out of jail, and there was a point where he came on stage and he started like, "Hey man, just got out of jail.
Yeah,
fuck the man and the cops, and there's a bunch of." He was up there for like 10 minutes. He was like your version of a Bobby Blotzer speech or whatever, yeah, you say when he gets out on the drum. Like it was a drum solo. It was gold. I was sitting there like, I was just like getting, I went and got popcorn. I was watching. I was like, this guy's a moron. And he was just like, that was worth going. They sounded terrible that night too. But
I saw the Methods of Mayhem project of his shortly after, okay, that, because he did that after he quit Motley not long after that. And he did the same thing. Like, you know, but now he's guitar and he's a front man, so it's a little more natural. But he's up there literally in a prison suit. You know, that was his garb for the day.
He was wearing that during that tour. He was doing the same thing.
Yeah, so he was prepping all this stuff. Yeah, and he was not he was not having it, man. Yeah, he was like, fuck the police, this is all fucking bullshit. And think of, and to segue a little bit away from that, it's odd when you look at that collection of characters that Tommy is the best at Twitter out of all of them.
Doesn't suck.
I'm amazed that guy can turn a phone on, you know, I mean, sometime, you know, it's just like, you think technology would really be a problem for that guy. Yeah, Tommy's a good hurt at times. But yeah, I have to admit, it was a little cringy, even for a younger, drunker me. I think it would have been in my late 20s when I saw that. That this is a guy kind of making light of spending time in jail for beating his wife.
Yeah, sure.
Nah, he claims it's not true, but I don't think too many people believe that. Anyway.
So we went off the rails a little bit there. I think we were talking about the 40th anniversary.
Yeah, got heavy there again. Sorry, fans. Well, we gotta dial that back. We gotta watch that now. We have to kind of keep things light for a while, I think. Yeah. So bullshit. You guys started 40 years ago ish. Close our show with the phrase "Rock is not dead," and we, you know, kind of tie in a little joke about something we talked about on the episode every week. And you know, when we started this show, Luce, it was really about kind of both of us, maybe just rekindling our love for current rock, new bands, things that kind of nature.
Me, I rekindled your love for it. Oh, me, I was responsible.
You're taking a little too much credit, but you definitely played a role. Let's put it that way. Yeah, you threw some gas on a fire that was about to extinguish.
Well, wasn't that my role, though, is taking all the credit?
Oh, I forgot, of course. Yes, well done, Loose Cannon.
All right, continue.
I can't believe I didn't allow you to do your job.
Exactly.
You're just doing your job, man.
God.
So, yeah, anyway, there is a new savior for rock. I'm not sure if you've heard this. It has been irritating the fuck out of me, and I got to get this off my chest. But Miley Cyrus apparently is now the face of rock and roll, and she is going to save it. I have seen so many people over the last year about now gush over her doing some very unimpressive cover of a 90s classic. She's done a lot of grunge stuff. It came up in my episode with Dave Brewington. He gushed about her version of, I think, Say Hello to Heaven from Temple of the Dog.
Gushed? And, I haven't heard this yet. Okay.
Oh, yeah. And he's not the only one. I've seen other people share videos of, like, I don't care what you think about Miley Cyrus. This is just amazing. Look, I'm sorry, but first of all, let me get one thing out of the way. Miley Cyrus, not even a credible artist. Okay, she's a fucking child star. Can she sing? Yes. Is there anything remarkable she brings to the table? No, she is not. And I'm sorry, but getting a Joan Jett haircut and putting on a Plasmatics t-shirt, if that's all you need, well, fuck, rock and roll is goddamn dead. They talked about her on Decibel Geek, and here's what they did. They Decibel Geek got into it with, they talked about how Elton John ruined an Ozzy song, which, by the way, I tend to disagree. I like Elton John's performance on That Ordinary Man. It's not his best vocal performance of all time, but I thought it was a touching song and well done. I like the way that worked out, but Aaron Camaro, not a fan. Not a problem there. We just disagree is all. So it was talked about, but like, man, Elton John ruins another song because he's doing Nothing Else Matters with Miley Cyrus, apparently. They didn't mention anything about Miley ruining it. What the fuck, man? It's right there, guys. Come on, Chris. Come on, Aaron. Miley Cyrus is not the fucking headline there? Quit ruining our songs, Miley. Okay? Go back and make Wrecking Ball and pop garbage. That is your job. You are not a rock star. You are a fucking Disney fucking Pop-Tart who shot out of the cannon of a fucking half-ass country musician. Your dad is the fucking Vanilla Ice of country, and you are a fucking poor version of Hannah Montana. You're just a wannabe Hannah Montana, Miley.
Do you need a coffee?
Maybe I need less coffee. Yeah, a little scratchy after that. Yeah, you, Loose Cannon?
I actually forgot until recently that she was Hannah Montana, and I didn't until you just mentioned it. I didn't know the song "Wrecking Ball" was by her. Mm-hmm. I know the song exists,
yeah,
but it sounds like it could be a lot of different other pop artists. I just didn't know it was her until you just mentioned it just now.
Yeah,
so. I will just agree with everything you said because she's not in my – obviously, she's nowhere in our zone. I will 100% agree about the whole Vanilla Ice thing. In fact, I think that his best performance ever is the song that my kids listen to, which is he guests on Old Town Road by Lil Nas X. You know?
Hey, that's an impressive drop there. They must be popular with the kids then.
So Billy Ray is on that,
yeah.
That song. That's – and. Jesus.
Yeah, and my point to Decibel Geek is not that Elton John is great and I can't wait to hear him sing that. I'm saying if you got Elton John and Miley Cyrus and Elton John is your biggest problem, you know, it's like
No. You
come home loose, your wallpaper's falling off the walls, your pipes are burst, which one do you fix first, right? Neither. Your house is on fucking fire. Okay? So...
My house is pretty spectacular.
Oh, yeah, sorry. I forgot about that.
Anyway,
I'll come up with a different analogy next time. But anyway, so yeah, no, Miley Cyrus is the fucking house fire. Elton John is the wallpaper being burnt.
And by the way, even on that, the whole title track from Ozzy, Elton John just showed how overproduced Ozzy's voice is on that track. You can hear it's like, okay, it sounds like Elton John is actually stepping up to the mic and doing the best he can at his age.
Yeah.
And then the magical vocals come in on the other verses.
Ozzy gets a little pitch correction help. So
yeah, exactly. That's what I mean. So, but all right. Yeah, good point. I have nothing else to add except that I don't understand. This is where we are in rock, right? Is it correct that we're looking
that's
kind of
my point. You know,
to bring there has to be a Miley Cyrus that even brings the relevance of rock's, I don't know, place in today's society.
And people
get
that you and I trusted voices in the underground, you know, the people that, like Decibel Geek, we are champions of rock. They failed, and they're derelict in their duty by not attacking Miley. And,
you hear that,
and,
Aaron?
Yeah, you were derelict.
Are you asking?
I think they're
like
just their heads too much in football right now. Like both their teams are probably going to be in the Super Bowl.
Fuck you,
and
Bacco.
They just can't focus and see the forest for the trees right now. So hopefully, in the middle of February, they'll be back on track and they'll see what's going on.
I think this is essentially you're asking them to do kind of like newspapers. You want a retraction.
Yeah, I definitely a clarification.
Want?
We talked about Cobra Kai a while back in an episode, Luis, and at the time, I think you were still about halfway through the first season. And then we mentioned it at the beginning of this year that the full third season actually dropped on January 1st and on Netflix.
Yep.
So at this point, I am under the understanding that we have both now seen every episode of Cobra Kai. Is that correct?
That is correct. Your information is valid.
My quick thoughts on 1 and 2. 1 was brilliant. It's just a really fun concept. It was well done. It was moving the story forward. It was bringing characters that you like and hate and kind of thrown in a different light. And the humor was intentionally dumb, and it was well done. Season two was still pretty good. Just it was, like a lot of things. It runs its. You might have the best stuff early, and then things kind of just go where they want to, but. Before we get into season three, because we'll break that down. By the way, people, spoilers coming. So if you haven't watched it, you might want to just come back to this episode, at least this part of this episode, at some point. We are going to get into some details. At least I plan on it. But anyway, what now you've seen both season one and two. What were your thoughts?
Well, first off, Cobra Kai, absolutely getting on the show because we've talked about qualifications. Has Cobra in the title? Check. About the 80s. And guaranteed the majority of the people listening to the show watch Karate Kid. What do you think?
Yeah, probably.
1, 2, and 3. Done.
Yeah.
But, for me, Cobra Kai from day one has been kind of – I almost know it's almost like a good hurt. Like there are brilliant parts with Johnny and things like that. Just pure comic gold and everything like that combined with just terrible generic storylines – back and forth. So it's always been that's my synopsis. The season one and two is a combination of just gloriously awesome and just like, oh, let me get through the storyline and back to shit that I actually care about.
Yeah. So you didn't like some of the character development, I understand, but
Just the kid. A lot of the kid stuff. Like anything that has to do with any kind of plot device that puts Johnny and LaRusso in the same scene together or interacting is just genius. I love it.
Those are the best moments for sure.
The whole scene at the end of season two when they were eating dinner together with both of their wives.
Yeah.
That whole stuff. So anyway, that's my synopsis. I do enjoy the show. So I was excited about season three.
I was too. And so now season three picks up with what's the Miguel? He's in the hospital. Mm-hmm. He's paralyzed from the big fight at the end of season two. Johnny is now estranged from basically everybody. He threw his phone into the beach just as a Elizabeth Shue's character was messaging him back on Facebook. So we knew that there's almost zero chance that she's not at least going to make a cameo in season three. And we, so the story picks up from there. So nobody wants it. Johnny's and Danny LaRusso's car dealership. Nobody wants to buy cars from him because they had a big karate fight. Both the dojos are sort of taken down. And one of the probably should have been the first sign that we were in for a letdown on season three. How basically Cobra Kai. John Kreese went from being a homeless guy to owning Cobra Kai again simply by not leaving. You know what I mean? Like that. That's how business transfer. Now he now pays rent on the building. He's now in charge of like making sure he has his insurance papers and his taxes. All done.
By the way, that's how businesses are done. Is mostly you can take over a business just by squatting.
Yeah, you just go in there and don't leave. And then the other guys, you know what? You can have it. And then that's it. And believe it or not, season three ends with a more ridiculous premise involving that whole, just like, this is not how fucking you handle the situation. I get this is stupid, but to me, one of the things that I'll hit on as we get into this stuff, but season three, it was dumb, but it wasn't like the intentional funny dumb. There was just too much. Just like, come on. So I don't know. Where do you want to get into this?
I like the fact that, first off, I think if that Cobra Kai was going to be a show about us, I am definitely LaRusso. You're definitely Johnny.
Yeah, absolutely.
I am the more responsible one. You have the Coors. I do like the fact that the bartender said, "Why don't you just drink a Coors Light like a normal dude instead of ordering this Coors Banquet or something like that?" Yeah. He said that. Did you get that?
Yeah,
one?
That was awesome.
Now he's refusing to pay. He said he didn't order a Coors Light. He ordered Coors Banquet.
Light beer is for pussies.
Do I need to call the cops?
I don't know. Do you?
Okay, I thought you'd like that one. But no, I mean, like, in general...
Yeah, LaRusso's over there getting IPAs, and, like, Johnny's, like, fucking spitting fucking peanut shells on the floor with his Coors Banquet beer.
I love it. Johnny's the best. And I'll tell you this. My first impression was that when the season started... you know, it has so many things that could be great about it, where I love all the Facebook bullshit where Miguel's trying to make a cool persona for him. They're taking the funny pictures.
Yeah.
He drafts this great message he's going to send out. What's her name again?
I can't. Allie?
I think Allie. Anyway, Elizabeth Shue's character. And all this stuff. That stuff was great. I do like it wasn't used to its purpose, but there's a Dee Snider part about his foot coming back to life.
That was funny, but also like Jesus fuck.
Dumb. I know. It was forced.
I thought D actually sucked in the episode. It was not funny. It was not. It was like
I'd say intention. I'd say not executed well. I mean, the idea. If you're on the writing board,
yes,
you're there. And like the idea of that his foot coming back to it from the power of rock and roll saving him is cool. There, I mean, what show do you have that drops a fucking Wasp song?
Well, that was one of the highlights, man. Well, and there, to your point, I guarantee I've listened to Wasp more recently than you.
There you go.
I don't think LaRusso's over there listening to Wasp.
No, and that like just like funny references. The first, and then you had like plot devices like putting both of those characters into a car hunting for the lost son or some bullshit. You know, that's a bad plot, but they put them in the same scene together. All this stuff was great, but here's the thing that killed me, and maybe you're going more of this, is that when you have a season that the plot involves Karate Kid 2 a lot, like seeing the guy.
Nobody saw that movie.
Nobody saw that.
I knew none of those characters.
Yeah, I know none of those characters. Like, oh, look, there's the love interest from Karate Kid 2, who's now 59 years old. And then the old crusty guy that apparently almost killed him in this Karate Kid 2 is in there. When you're relying on that, that's bad. But the main problem is I don't give a fuck about John Kreese. I don't need to know his whole backstory
in
Vietnam. I don't need to know all the stuff.
And it was really poorly done. It was
really
just
poorly done.
The his sergeant lying about his girlfriend, that they're in a POW camp from the Viet Cong POW camp, and they're forced to fight each other like over a pit of cobras, and of course that's where I remember my favorite part of watching that, because at this point I was like kind of aghast like you. My wife and I were watching it, and like you know how they tease, like they just show the guy like, oh my God, look what's in the pit. You know what I mean? And he's like looking down, and then you see the fear in his eyes. And then later we find out, and I look at my honey, he's like, oh, it's filled with cobras and Kai.
Yeah. No, not the Kai, but the cobras. But it was that kind of stuff. Like, I'm like, okay. It actually seemed, that's the problem with this, is that you never knew you're going to get at the movies with this is like,
we're taking over Brian Davis. This is goddamn good magic movie memories.
But it is exactly the same thing as what's sad is that it started season two is kind of like Karate Kid 2, like any kind of season. Yeah. Like this third season is like,
this is the remake with fucking Will Smith's kid.
Oh yeah. I forgot that they did that too. But yeah, I mean, it was disappointing.
Did not give a fuck about Kreese either. Yeah,
I had just enough Kreese in season two, and I was like, motherfucker, he is the focus of the season, I'm going to be pissed. And there were so many backstories. I'm like, I don't care.
Yeah,
I don't care.
Totally agreed. Every time they went to one of those kind of like flashbacks of him in Vietnam, I was like, there's nothing connecting me to this. Because Macchio is one of the worst actors of his generation that had any success. And
I think he's actually pretty.
He does okay in this show. You know what I mean? But honestly, the William Zabka character, Johnny
Amazing.
Lawrence,
he's the show.
He is the show. And that's kind of how it started. And I think that they should have kind of at least tried to stay more with that. And again, more of it's almost like that movie Heat with Pacino and De Niro.
Right,
and it's like 2.5 hours long, and they're only in this in one. Those two have hardly ever been
2-3 minutes.
Yeah. And it's just like, and it's a brilliant 2 or 3 minutes, but man, could have used more of those two together. But so a couple other things, I know they tried to kind of like again, this kind of ties into your kid development, right? The character Robbie, I get what they're trying to do, but man, I don't know if it's just casting. He's so annoying.
He sucks. Always has sucked. He is an Abercrombie and Fitch.
I'm going to misinterpret everything and run away.
Should have known.
Robbie, it's not what you think.
Did you two get together the second I was gone or wait a week to make it look good?
It's not like that.
It's now I know why you stopped writing.
I stopped writing because you never answered.
Yeah, well, it's kind of hard to write back in between getting my face busted.
I didn't know.
Oh, you wouldn't have cared even if you didn't.
It's not a fault.
Stay out of this.
I don't think I will.
You two deserve each other.
He is the Abercrombie and Fitch model that shouldn't speak, is basically who that kid is.
Yeah, and I'm sorry, but Elizabeth Shue... She just cashed a check, man. She did not even fucking try. Did she only... She had one expression on her face the entire fucking time. And it was kind of annoying. I'm like, I want you to stop. Just wrap up whatever point you're going to make and move on. I couldn't believe I felt that way. I was looking forward to her coming into this and throwing something at it. But it was just like... She did not give two shits about fucking doing anything here.
Well, but that's the whole thing, is that they could have used that. Her whole thing was could have been a great plot device, a conflict. She was thrown in there for a second and then taken out, and it had nothing to do with where you thought that the season issue.
Honestly,
like
I thought she was in there too much.
Fair enough, but as far as the acting part. But okay. But here's the thing that really took it to the next level for me as far as watching it is I actually became embarrassed because for the wife in the back, she's like, this is not a good show. She likes it a lot. Like, you know, it was like a good hurt. It's just like, are you really liking this? Do you like the characters that much that you're going to keep going with this ridiculousness? And what it was this, is that the first two seasons, I don't remember it becoming basically that the fight scenes were almost like a musical you were watching. Like
right.
Every episode is a huge, elaborate fight to the point. It was like the Breaking 2 Electric Boogaloo, where all of a sudden it's like, this is the part where we dance fight or whatever like that. There's a huge fight. Like, it's insane. But it's every episode. There's a fucking throwdown. The entire city. It's like Footloose.
Well, and let me, before you get too far there, that gets to a couple other things that first of all, it exposes something about the movie The Karate Kid that I think should have been more obvious than it was. That karate is not cool, and it was never cool, and it was never popular. Okay, that arena when Daniel and Johnny fight in the movie is fucking packed. Now, I know that's some movie magic. There probably wasn't actually, but they made it look like it was a fucking packed basketball arena. And I'm sorry, but those things are filled with parents and siblings. And by filled, I mean sparsely. There is no...
Not the Valley, bro.
You hear,
not the Valley.
Yeah, the All-Valley tournament is just such a huge deal. And then, so segue into Cobra Kai, right? The cool kid, the kind of jock bully from season one and season two, would never fucking join Cobra Kai. He's like, you guys are dorks.
Nerd!
You're fucking losers, man. I'm not hanging out. I'm walking out this door, and I'm not going to feel bad about it because you guys are losers. You know? And the fact, I was like, I cannot believe that this guy, and then like that Hawk character, remember he was kind of endearing, you know? And man, he just became just like the... And I get that's what they were trying to do, is show this guy become a bad guy, but then try to... The problem was, he was not a character that could be redeemed. It's like, no, just go fuck yourself, man. You know, you're a douchebag. Man.
And lastly, before you get you get all this, is that the other jump the shark thing is the fact that don't make Johnny a better person. Make him just slightly better.
Yeah.
But all this redemption bullshit, no, that takes away from it. That's the whole thing about, listen.
Yeah, he keeps shooting himself in the foot is kind of more the way to go.
And that's the part too, is that there was a time, I'm not sure if you remember this from your youth, but there are the classic Tom and Jerry cartoons.
Yeah.
where Tom and Jerry hate each other and try to kill each other. And then later on, there was Tom and Jerry that were buddies. Do you remember this version?
I do. Tom and Jerry were friends. That was
and
shitty.
That ruined everything.
Yep.
You do not make LaRusso and Johnny friends. Fuck that. No. You keep them fighting against each other. It's the Tom and Jerry rule. Classic Tom and Jerry. You lose that, you lose everything.
So let me set that up for the listener then. The people who have watched the show anyway, or people who don't care that it gets ruined. So the show, and this is where it really, I don't, look, I'm a guy who sat through every season of Lost. I will probably watch every episode of this fucking show if they go five more years, just because it's just, I've committed too much time at this point to not do it. So even though I think this is just set up to be one of the dumbest fucking seasons ever, this is how it ends. Cobra Kai sends so John Kreese sends his students on a home invasion to Daniel LaRusso's house. they break, too. Like, there's not a knock and a little exchange. They literally throw shit through windows, go in, and just start beating the people up in their home. And so how is this decided to be resolved? There is one moment that I liked out of that where Daniel LaRusso is in Cobra Kai studio. He looks at Carice. He's like, you wanted a fight? You got to fight. That was like, okay, I can accept that for this. And then there's no fight. And then it's like, what do they decide to do? Instead of call the fucking police, we're going to settle this at the All Valley Tournament, which was banned. And then for a very soft reason was like they decided, well, if you guys all are willing to sign waivers and you really want to do it, go ahead.
No, what you need to do first is you have to go to a meeting.
Yeah.
And advocate why you should beat the living shit out of each other.
Right. That's what I'm getting at. The whole tournament was canceled because of that violent uprising from the school, which, you know what? That makes sense. It's like, we can't do this. This is what we saw. Look, that is how a community would properly respond to that kind of violence breaking out in a school based on two karate dojos fighting.
And a home invasion.
Yes. Now they've decided to return to the whole fucking tournament. And because, you know, the kids want to do it and they're willing to sign insurance waivers. You have a home invasion, and rather than call the fucking police, shut this fucking business that isn't even this guy's business anyway. He doesn't own anything, but somehow he's like
he owns by squatting.
By proxy.
It's like the same thing as
it's called the proxy way, squat.
No, but this is also they didn't mention it really. It was but because of COVID, they can't evict any business owners right now.
Ah, valid point. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Nobody's wearing masks either, by the way.
That's true.
yeah. So at the show ends, setting up season four with the winner. If Miyagi and what was the great name?
Eagle
Fang.
Well, I think it was Eagle Fang.
Eagle Fang.
That part was great.
Johnny starts his own dojo in the park.
Weird name, man.
Yeah, Eagle Fang Dojo, Miyagi-Do joined forces, and they're going to compete against Cobra Kai in the All-Valley Tournament, and the winner take all, and the loser has to leave town or something like that. It's like some kind of Duke Boys plot where it's like you cross the county line, nothing the cops can do. But Jesus fucking Christ.
So will you be watching season four?
Yes.
But it is, I guess you know though, like this is going on a little bit, but I just have to say this, that it's one of those things where it's very odd because it, like, halfway through you're like, I have to finish this,
yeah.
But it's not good.
Yeah.
It's not a good hurt anymore. And that's the thing, like, you're like, that's, I think that's a difference though, too, with men. I'll relate Cobra Kai season three to the dedication that men, male rock fans, have to a band.
Yeah.
You will stick through a bad era of a band because you're in it. You're committed, and you're hoping that the next album's actually going to be good. Right?
Yeah, exactly. I can't remember the last time I liked the Motley Crue record when I bought it, and I'll buy the next one if they happen to do one.
Yeah. So in other words, this is Cobra Kai is the Motley Crue of of reboots.
It is fucking hard rock, baby. I would like to say a couple things I did like. I really enjoyed the when Johnny took over Miguel's rehab.
Yeah, just kept dropping him and calling him a pussy the whole time.
Yeah, like, and then just all these little things he rigged up to help him, like, learn how to walk again. I thought that was pretty clever, and it was fun. And of course, yeah, blasting a classic first album Wasp track, man, that was I was like, all right, now we're talking.
Like I'm saying, it's a season that's built on almost like two different writers. Like if you were in a writer's room.
Yeah.
Like there's some guy that writes all the great stuff, and there's just this awful other team. And that's what that's what it is.
Yeah.
So anyway, my point is, if you want Cobra Kai season 4 to be quality, then you fucking hire writers that have Cobra already in the name. Okay.
Mm.
You get the Cobras and Fire writing crew, Ibako, and there might be a Bro Dragon character that might appear in season 4 as well. And I think that would be a perfect spot for a nemesis.
That would be the way to introduce Bro Dragon into the world and kind of launch him as maybe that's the way to go. Kind of get Bro Dragon in Cobra Kai season 4. People are like, ooh, yeah. I like this Bro Dragon guy. And then it kind of gives him his vehicle to become his own star.
That's what I mean. You slowly introduce it. Mm, just like
brilliant.
Like, and then he gets his own show.
So there you have it. LC, I'm on board. You have offered our services to write season 4 of Cobra Kai. If they take us up on it, I'm in.
I mean, Bro Dragon's definitely a better character than fucking Hawk.
Hey, maybe we do one of those like classic sitcom things where you just replace a character without explanation. And all of a sudden,
it's just Bro Dragon.
Yeah, Hawk's gone and Bro Dragon's in. No story.
No explanation. Just here he is. He does keg stands. He rips off his shirt all the time because Hawk already takes his shirt off a lot.
Yeah.
So, maybe we can do it. What do you think?
I'm in.
I think that's the wrap up right there. We brought it all in. Oh well. I hope everybody enjoyed our foray into damn good movie memories.
Yes? Yeah. Damn right, man. I know for a fact people who listen to this show have watched that show. So I think this will be all right.
Yeah, I think more people have probably seen it than the Bobby Blotzer video. We spent 20 minutes reviewing, so I think we're safe.
Yeah, we're probably all right.
You're like, what are they talking about? I either have to see this, or I have no idea, and I'm going to skip through this segment. What do you think?
Yeah,
I think
man.
We painted a beautiful picture.
I'm with you.
Want to get out of here?
Yeah, man.
All right. Rock's not dead.
Crocus is coming on for season 4.
Can't believe that Weekend at Bernie's wasn't one of the first ones.
You know, my joke, the joke I should have made there is that I knew it was over when you found out about it that quick.
Good point. I like it.
Hey, this is Liberty DeVito.
This is Mike Del Judas.
This is Michael Cavanaugh from Broadway's Moving Out.
This is John Jackson, director of the Billy Joel Archive.
This is Russell Javers.
This is Richie Cannata, and you're listening to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast. It's awesome.
I'm Michael Grosvenor.
And I'm Jack Frenino.
We're lifelong Billy Joel fans who launched a podcast in 2020 celebrating the music we love.
Whether you're looking for the greatest hits or the B-sides and rarities, you'll find it all here. And if you've ever wondered what happens behind the scenes of a concert or recording session, we've got you covered.
Join us as we explore albums, tours, band members, the latest news, and more. You'll also get a unique glimpse into the music industry straight from the musicians and other professionals who help make it all happen.
Tune in to Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, at glasshousespod.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
Glass Houses, a Billy Joel podcast, is a proud member of the Pantheon Podcasts Network.